This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Quiet rally. It hasn't been flashy, hasn't been loud, but the market melt-up has been fairly steady, and stocks are breaking out into record territory.
Oil slick. Countries that rely on crude extend production cuts as fears of a global glut persist.
Arrive early and get ready to wait this summer as the TSA tests new security measures at some airports. We have those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for this Thursday, May the 25th. Good evening, everybody. I'm Bill Griffith, and tonight for Tyler Matheson, coming to you this evening from the New York Stock Exchange.
And I'm Sue Herrera. Welcome, everybody. Solid gains on Wall Street pushed the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 into record territory. The Dow remains just shy of its all-time high. Technology stocks led the way as Amazon flirted with $1,000 a share. And the advance got a surprise lift from a sector that's been faltering. Retail. We'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, here are the closing numbers. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 70 points to 21,082. The NASDAQ added 42, and the S&P 500 was up 10. Bob Pisani has more now on the market's climb to new highs.
We have a breakout. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ have been hitting new highs recently, but they broke out again today. Now, critics of this rally have complained that a small group of big names, led by Google, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, that's what's powering the rally. And while that's true today, we did see over 200 new highs on the New York Stock Exchange. That means the rally is broadening out. Now, the rally is all the more surprising because it's being done without the help from oil. It was down 4% today, despite the fact that OPEC announced an extension of its oil production cuts for another 9 months. The market seemed to want even deeper cuts. Another surprise, the sharp rally from last week's decline. Traders were deeply worried about the Trump agenda last Wednesday. Remember, the Dow plunged 373 points then on concern over President Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey. But once the president left for Europe, those concerns seemed to go away. Whether those concerns will resurface when the president returns from Europe is not clear. But for the moment, with the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ up six straight days, nothing is slowing down this rally. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
And as Bob mentioned, stocks rallied without the help of energy shares today. They were dragged lower by the decline in the price of oil itself after OPEC agreed to extend its production cuts for 9 months. Now, you would think that the production cuts would support prices, but that was not the case when one oil minister ruled out even deeper cuts. Domestic crude fell below $50 a barrel with that decline of about 5% today. Steve Sedgwick reports now from the OPEC meeting in Vienna.
It's been an extraordinary day in Vienna, where ministers from both OPEC and indeed non-OPEC oil-producing nations managed to put together an agreement to extend a deal they first talked about in November last year, which was supposed to last 6 months to the end of June. Now will be rolled forward for a further 9 months, where the parties involved, 24 oil-producing nations, accounting for around about half the global output, will actually cut 1.8 million barrels a day for the next 9 months in order to try and find some rebalancing in the market. Outside of OPEC, though, the financial markets took it badly and the oil price fell in trading on Thursday. I spoke to the very influential Saudi oil minister about this, and he said regardless of short-term price moves on the market, this was a strategy that OPEC was sticking with.
Price is not the key indicator that I'm looking at. We're looking at inventories. And inventories ultimately will drive the other indicators, including investment, including price, including stocks of companies and operators as well as service companies. So if we focus on the fundamentals that we can control, the market will move in the right direction.
Now, in terms of what happens next, well, there are all kinds of concerns about compliance, whether all the members, regardless of price, will actually comply with the cuts, whether there are other producers out there who they can't control, including non-OPEC producers such as the shale producers in the US, will actually dent the price and create the need for more affirmative, more aggressive action from OPEC and their non-OPEC allies. But for now, in Vienna, it's been quite an extraordinary day where the oil producing nations have come up with what they call a historic deal. This is Steve Sedgwick, the Nightly Business Report in Vienna.
Rob Thummel joins us now to discuss what OPEC's decision will mean for the oil market and where he sees oil prices heading. He's portfolio manager at Tortoise Capital Advisors. Rob, good to have you here with us. Now, you heard Steve Sedgwick's report right now. I think it gels with what you're expecting, which is oil prices that steady out between about $50 and $60 a barrel.
Yep, exactly right. You know, we agree exactly with what Steve said and the OPEC minister here at Tortoise. You know, we think this was a very constructive thing that OPEC did. Basically, they have now set us up for an environment where we're going to have global oil inventories back at the five-year average level. We haven't been there at the five-year average level for a couple years. So that sets up oil prices to rise from here, and we think that that's a good time for investors to be looking at energy stocks because of oil prices' recent weakness.
What role, Rob, do U.S. producers play in all of this? I can imagine, I mean, they play a greater and greater role in supply, the world supply picture these days, and I can imagine that they're licking their chops every time the price goes up because OPEC's cutting production.
Yeah, no, very good point. So the U.S. producers and their role is really critical in the short term and the long term. Longer term is even more important. So if you look at what's happening in the global oil markets today, half the global oil supply is really flat to declining because not enough capital is being invested to grow production for half the global oil supply. Who's going to fill that longer-term supply when demand goes up and half the other global oil supply declines? It's going to be the U.S. and it's going to be OPEC. So the U.S. shale producers are really, really critical for oil in the long term. Here in the short term, obviously, we're going to grow production a little bit. If prices rise too much, there'll be a bit of a regulator because oil field service costs will rise as well. And that will result in U.S. production probably flattening out a little bit more and not going up as much as people think.
So let's talk some names. You say there are different ways that you can play the oil field right now. First, the Permian Basin oil producers. You like Pioneer Natural and Diamondback Energy specifically.
Yeah. So what we like to play in really any oil price environment are the lowest cost producers of crude oil. And the Permian Basin in particular has established itself as one of the lowest cost producing basins really in the U.S. and maybe even in the world. So companies like Pioneer Natural Resources, Diamondback Energy, they're going to grow their production anywhere between 20 and 40% next year. They're going to spend within their cash flow, which is key, not outspending their cash flow so they don't have to rely on the capital markets. So they're going to grow their production, which grows their cash flow. And generally, if you grow your cash flow, the markets respond to that in the form of higher stock prices.
All right. On that note, Rob, thank you. Rob Thummel with Tortoise Capital Advisors. Bill?
Well, a positive surprise in retail today, and it came from a surprising place, Sears. The troubled retailer saw its shares rise after reporting its first quarterly profit in nearly 2 years. The store cut costs by nearly a third, and it was also helped by the sale of its Craftsman brand. Sears, of course, once the largest retailer in the U.S., has been struggling in recent years to turn things around. Today's shares rose, though, by 13%.
And Best Buy's turnaround looks to be taking hold. That retailer's revamped stores helped push sales and profit higher in the most recent quarter, blowing past the expectations of Wall Street. And that helped push the stock higher by 21%. Courtney Reagan has more on what Best Buy is doing right.
What a quarter for Best Buy. The best-selling categories at the consumer electronics retailer were high-priced computers, connected home items, and gaming, thanks largely to the March launch of Nintendo's new Switch game console. The retailer has spent years cutting costs, closing stores, and making the company more efficient. That part of its transformation is over, and now it's growing sales and grabbing share. Best Buy's online comparable sales soaring more than 20%. Online strength surprising many as Amazon's influence on consumers grows.
What Best Buy figured out under a new management team a few years ago, where the store actually makes sense with consumer electronics online. So they got much closer with their vendors. They really focused on the bigger TVs. The service in their stores is better. And now they're doing more in-home service, too. So they kind of figured out that part of the consumer electronics product cycle where Amazon couldn't really play.
CEO Hubert Joly says tax refund delays did hurt temporarily. But when consumers eventually got the refunds, they spent them at Best Buy. Appliances also sold well and helped profit margins, even though H.H. Gregg and Sears held liquidation sales with significantly lower prices ahead of their store closures. Some analysts are concerned about Best Buy's ability to continue turning in strong sales, particularly on big-ticket items. How many laptops and washing machines do consumers need?
As great as Best Buy is doing, as great as this quarter was, I do worry a bit just on the sustainability of these sales gains.
But then again, the rest of the year is expected to see the launch of new gaming consoles, virtual reality, and connected home merchandise that could keep consumers turning to Best Buy for its expertise and in-person service options. There appears to be value of a leaner Best Buy as one of the last consumer electronics retailers standing. It's in fighting shape to coexist with Amazon. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Courtney Reagan.
And there was yet another bright spot in the retail sector amid all the recent carnage. Struggling teen retailer Abercrombie & Fitch reported a smaller-than-expected decline in same-store sales. That company was helped by strong demand for its surfwear brand Hollister. Abercrombie & Fitch recently put itself up for sale, and today the stock gained 9%.
Well, still ahead, attention travelers. If you think going through security at the airport is a hassle now, it could get worse this summer. President Trump is accusing NATO allies of not paying their bills. Speaking in front of members of the alliance, the president called out 23 of the 28 countries for not contributing what the administration says they should to the military organization.
Over the last 8 years, the United States spent more on defense than all other NATO countries combined. If all NATO members had spent just 2% of their GDP on defense last year, we would have had another $119 billion for our collective defense.
NATO members target spending of 2% of economic output on defense, but that is just a guideline. Bill?
Elsewhere, an appeals court has refused to reinstate President Trump's temporary travel ban for six Muslim nations. The majority of the judges on that court said that the president's broad immigration power to deny entry into the U.S. is not absolute, and they sided with the challengers in this case. The attorney general said late today that the Justice Department will ask the Supreme Court now to review the appeals court ruling.
Just in time for the start of the summer travel season, the TSA is looking at tighter security at airport checkpoints. That could mean that you and I will have to take more out of our carry-on bags before they go through the screening machines. Phil LeBeau takes a look at whether you should expect longer waits and longer lines.
After years of watching travelers stuff more and more into their carry-on bags, the TSA is saying enough. This summer, the Transportation Security Administration is testing a new program that will have travelers at certain airports declutter their carry-ons before they go through screening machines.
They have to weed through multiple things in there. The more stuff you put in there, the more organics that are in there, the slower the process is going to become.
To speed up screening, the TSA will ask some passengers to put electronics bigger than a cell phone in a separate bin. That includes tablets and e-readers like a Kindle. The goal? Make it easier for TSA agents to spot potential problems in bags. And the new unpacking procedure may go beyond electronics. The TSA says officers may also advise travelers to place other carry-on items separately in a bin. Although passengers may experience more bag checks, we are testing quicker and more targeted procedures at these locations. But given how long some already have to wait in security lines, travelers are skeptical unpacking even more bags will speed up security.
But it's definitely a chore to go through. It's probably the worst part of the experience. And a lot of us have tried to do pre-check and other things that fly a lot so that we don't have to do that.
I don't know if it'll make lines longer necessarily. I think once people get accustomed to understanding that that's part of the process, just as it did with your shoes having to be removed and that kind of thing, I think that people will get accustomed to it and it'll change.
The new procedures will not be tested in TSA pre-check lines. And with tighter screenings raising the possibility of longer lines, don't be surprised if more travelers pay to use expedited security services like Clear, which is now operating in 17 airports around the country. Whatever security line they use, a record number of travelers are expected to fly this summer. The airlines are adding more flights to meet the demand, and many airports will be ready with shops and restaurants hiring more employees. But because there's a physical limit to adding more security lines at most airports, the TSA is trying to make existing checkpoints move faster and more efficiently. For now, these changes are limited to 10 airports. But if they're successful, the TSA is considering expanding the program to other airports around the country. Phil LeBeau, Nightly Business Report, Chicago.
And you can read more about airport security this summer on our website, NBR.com.
General Motors is being accused of cheating emissions tests. A class action lawsuit brought against the automaker by owners of Duramax branded trucks alleged that the company outfitted two of its models with devices that ensure the vehicles passed federal and state emission standards. GM has responded by saying that the claims are baseless.
Higher membership fees help results at Costco. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The warehouse retailer also said strong demand in the U.S. helped same-store sales grow at a faster pace than analysts were expecting. Profit and revenue also rose, and they were ahead of street forecasts. Costco shares initially rose on the After the Bell news, adding to a 1% gain during the regular session, where they closed at 174.73. The cosmetics chain Ulta Beauty said strong sales in its e-commerce business helped same-store sales come in above street expectations. The company also saw profit and revenue rise, with both beating street forecasts. Shares initially rose in after-hours trading and also ended the regular session up more than 4% to $293.04. Signet Jewelers said sales got off to a slow start this year. The company posted revenue that missed estimates, saying continued headwinds in the retail environment pressured its results. The owner of Kay Jewelers and Jared also missed profit expectations, but it did reaffirm its guidance for the year. That wasn't enough to help the stock, though. Shares fell nearly 8% to $50.30.
Medtronic topped profit expectations as the medical device maker said that results were helped by new product launches and higher sales of heart devices. Revenue also grew and topped analysts' expectations. Company says it expects adjusted earnings for 2018 to rise now between 9 and 10%. Medtronic shares were up 1% today to $85.58. Sales fell more than expected, though, at Hormel, as the meat producer said an oversupply of turkey created pricing pressures. Those results missed estimates. As a result, the maker of Spam and Skippy peanut butter also saw its profit fall short of street expectations. Hormel fell by 6% today to $33.13. And Dollar Tree is the latest retailer now saying that a delay in tax refunds this year caused customer spending to stall. The discount chain reported a surprise decline in same-store sales, but still managed to post earnings and overall revenue that matched analyst expectations. Shares of Dollar Tree rose nearly 1% to $78.80.
It was a wild day for Bitcoin. The digital currency hit an all-time high of more than $2,700 today before it dropped sharply. At its peak, midday, the currency gained more than 180% so far this year. The price reversal in today's session came as interest in Bitcoin was rising and apparently overwhelmed some exchanges where the currency can be bought and sold. But many of you are probably wondering why there's been a lot of talk about Bitcoin lately and what exactly it is.
What is Bitcoin? It's a payment system that uses completely virtual money for online transactions. The digital currency is called a Bitcoin. It's like cash for the internet, transferred between people via mobile app or a computer program. Users request and send bitcoins to pay for goods and services. But the identities of users and the transactions are kept anonymous through complicated encryptions. And unlike real money, Bitcoin has no centralized bank or authority that runs the system. Instead, it operates on an open source platform that can be accessed by anyone, and it's controlled by the people who use it, and, ultimately, the power of supply and demand. Which brings us to the value of a Bitcoin. Since its creation in 2009, it's fluctuated dramatically, from pennies to now over $2,000.
And while Bitcoin's use is certainly not mainstream, it recently got the attention of Fidelity, one of the world's largest asset management firms. So what are the pros and cons of Bitcoin? Joining us tonight, Ian Schur, executive editor at CNET. Ian, thanks for joining us. You know, given how wildly speculative a Bitcoin is, I'm even hesitant to talk about what the pros might be. But what are they?
A lot of them actually revolve around what that segment just pointed out. Privacy is a really big benefit. People are often worried about whether or not, especially if they're a political dissident or for something, you know, being able to have your cash be something that's completely private is a really good benefit. The other thing about it is the technology behind Bitcoin has the potential to really change the way that data is transferred and moved around the world. One of the big things that people really like about it is that because the data is not stored in one place, it's not as easily hacked. And that's a really big benefit.
Let's talk about the cons. First of all, it doesn't function like a traditional currency does. You don't get these wild kind of moves or even slightly large incremental moves in traditional currencies that are backed by a central bank. But also the hackers seem to really like the privacy aspect of Bitcoin, and that would be a distinct negative.
Yes. Well, the hackers like to use it because when they get their ransoms, for example, like the WannaCry ransomware that happened last week, they ask for Bitcoins because it's hard to trace. And, you know, they're able to take their money and go and use it. But the other thing about it that is pretty, you know, tough is that it's not insured. Right. The FDIC has no insurance for this. So if someone gets into your Bitcoin wallet is what they call instead of a bank account, they could take all of your money and that's it. It's over. It's like a wad of cash was taken from you. So that's a really tough part about it. And part of why, one of many reasons why, it hasn't proliferated further yet. Right now, it's still a fascination of Silicon Valley. Some Wall Street banks are looking at it, healthcare industry. But it hasn't gotten that far yet because people are still a little worried about the potential pitfalls of it.
All right. And let's do that now for the average person out there watching who might be intrigued. This is not for them to get involved with yet, if at all, right?
I would not recommend it myself, unless you're really wanting to live on the wild side. You know, there are people who have played with it. There was an alpaca farmer who was found a couple years ago who was selling socks and accepting Bitcoins. And some people like to do that and kind of play with it as a fascination because you don't have to sell individual Bitcoins. It doesn't have to be $2,000. You can sell fractions of them, just like there are pennies and dimes that you can give people. So that's something that you could do if you want to, but I wouldn't expect this to be a place where I'd put real money. Right. If you want to play with it, sure, go right ahead. But don't expect this to be something serious for quite a while.
Yeah. Ian Schur, the executive editor at CNET. Thanks for joining us tonight, Ian.
My pleasure.
All right. Coming up, a painting is worth a lot, especially in China. And the reason why may surprise you.
The Chinese government recently rolled out policies to help stabilize its currencies and promote investment in that country. It means that more money is staying put in China, less is flowing out. And one particular market is feeling the effects of that policy shift. Eunice Yoon is in Beijing.
To get a picture of how government policy impacts China's art market, meet artist Taisheng Zhou. At his Beijing studio, this veteran of Song Dynasty painting is preparing for an exhibit in the U.S., where his art is usually sold. But these days, he says his work is attracting more buyers in China. Antique collectors in China have started to collect my work, he says. I'm happy. China's art market is becoming a popular way for wealthy people here to invest. Many have purchased at auctions overseas, but in late 2015, authorities started worrying about money fleeing the country and imposed tighter controls on capital. That's forced more Chinese to look for new ways to invest their money at home. Beijing gallery owner and art investor Chris Reynolds is seeing a surge in sales.
Following the global financial crisis and then the stimulus package in China, which really supercharged liquidity and demand for Chinese art, there was a lull after that period. And so what we're actually seeing in the past year or so is a return to a rapid growth trend. For example, last fall, if you look at the auctions in China, in mainland China, you saw a kind of heat and sizzle that we haven't seen for 5 years.
Well, what's sparking that heat and sizzle?
We've seen liquidity increases, and then at the same time, we have capital controls, which are getting tighter and tighter. That's actually having the impact of trapping more capital within China, which will lead to different sorts of rapid price appreciation in assets here.
Auction houses like China Guardian are feeling the fervor. At its March auction, turnover jumped 50% from a year ago. The warm-up in the market has been quite obvious, she says. We estimate a 30% rise this year in the Chinese art market overall. That includes traditional art, antiques, and contemporary pieces. Good news for Tai, who hopes his modern take on an ancient technique will be enjoyed well into the future. I want people to feel my work is connected to the world around us, he says. Long past Beijing's policy decisions today.
For Nightly Business Report, I'm Eunice Yoon in Beijing.
And you can find out more about the Chinese art market on our website at nbr.com. And that will do it for Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Sue Herrera. Thanks for joining us.
Good night, Sue. I'm Bill Griffith. Have a great evening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Night, Bill.